Hello. This is Cindy Fowler from the North Carolina Reading Service, previously known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from Dave's Garden e-newsletter, the Triangle Gardener magazine, the Gardening for the Senses, and maybe from Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum. We'll start with Dave's Garden e-newsletter. This one is Proper Pruning of Pear Trees by Catherine Smith. Are you confused about pruning fruit trees? It's really not that hard. But let's start with the easiest, most forgiving of all the fruit trees. Pear trees are generally easy to grow and maintain. This is one type of tree that tends to be self-thinning to save you some work. The best time to do major pruning on your pear trees is during the dormant season before active growth begins in the spring. Generally, it is not recommended to heavily prune pear trees. The more you prune, the greater the chance that fire blight will develop. The leaves and branches will look as if they have been burned by fire. And it delays fruit production. It is generally best to prune pear trees late in the summer. You will stimulate the least amount of regrowth by pruning after the trees have finished growing for the year and have hardened their wood. If you live in an area where there's a chance for winter damage, wait to prune until late winter. Give your pear trees the proper growing environment. Then maintain a regular pruning schedule to enhance the best possible fruit production. Set a 3-year plan to get your pear trees into the shape and size you want. Start with a plan for your pruning project. Envision how you want the trees to look. The first year, remove limbs that are diseased, damaged, upright, crossing, and crowded. Suckers need to be removed as soon as you notice them to avoid them turning into woody, weak wood. The next year, thin out the tree some more and bring down some of the height. The third year, thin out the tree some more and cut down to the desired height. Always remove pruned branches from the area of your other trees. Burning the branches is a great way to prevent the spread of disease and infestation. Pear trees bloom and bear fruit on the sharp, short spurs that grow between its branches. Thin the spurs regularly. Older spurs should be removed occasionally to be replaced by more vigorous young ones. If you end up with too many small fruits set in 1 year, thin them out to let the remaining fruit grow large and not have to compete for nutrients. You can avoid ending up with too much fruit that goes to waste by thinning the fruit on the branches after it has set. Hand thin the fruit to leave at least 5 inches between the fruit. This will reduce your harvest and increase the health of the remaining fruit. It is especially a good idea to thin fruit on the high, hard-to-reach branches. Do check with your local extension office about the best choices of varieties of fruit trees that will do well in your area. There are many new varieties of both pear and apple trees that have been cultivated to be very resistant to fire blight. Fire blight. This is one disease that can easily severely damage and or kill your fruit trees. The leaves and twigs of the trees get the disease from insects who enter the flowers during springtime. The best way to prevent the disease is by choosing a resistant variety. The insects get it by gathering pollen from nearby cedar trees. It also helps to keep the tree plenty moist, especially during blossom time and when the fruit is ripening. Using mulch around the base of the tree will help hold in moisture and may also prevent too early flowering. Prune your tree lightly. This will avoid producing vigorous new growth that is more susceptible to blight. If your tree has already been hit by fire blight, you will need to prune out the affected shoots at least several inches below the damaged area. Be sure to sterilize your clippers in a chlorine solution between cuts and destroy the cuttings by burying or burning them. If your tree is badly damaged, it may need to be replaced. And now from Gardening for the Senses, The Sensual Garden by Larry Kaplan. A garden you can feel. Our sense of touch can make the garden an exciting place to explore the different plant textures. Place plants with interesting textures in a small, enclosed garden with comfortable garden seats or mossy places to sit. Garden beds, raised to a height of 2 feet and constructed with edges to sit on, bring touchable plants within reach. Choose only non-poisonous and non-prickly plants for the petting garden. There are many different textures you can include in the garden. Some plants have soft, fuzzy leaves or flowers, like lamb's ear, woolly thyme, and pussy willow. Many ornamental grasses, especially hare's tail grass, have fluffy flower heads. The blossoms on some plants, such as hibiscus, gardenia, and most lilies, feel silky to the touch. Blossoms of status and globe amaranth have a papery feel, as do the seed pods of honesty, also called the money plant. Plants to touch: Cape jasmine, coxcomb, feather grass, gay feather, globe amaranth, hare's tail grass, that's hares, H-A-R-E-S, tail grass, lamb's ears, lily, love lies bleeding, mullein, M-U-L-L-E-I-N, obedient plant, poppy, pussy willow, rose mallow, squirrel tail grass, status, woolly thyme, and wormwood. And a garden you can hear. The sounds that a garden makes can create subtle moods in visitors. The whisper of weeping plants, such as willows and birch, has a calming influence. The rustling of ornamental grasses and bamboo can create a sense of excitement and activity and make excellent audio signals to help gardeners orient themselves. This list suggests just a few plants you may want to include for their interesting sounds. Plants to listen to: animated oats, balloon flower, bamboo, Chinese lantern plant, honesty or money plant, pampas grass, and pearl grass, trees to listen to, birch, pine, and poplar. And now from the Triangle Gardener magazine, this article is by Kit Flynn, titled, Have the Courage of Your Gardening Convictions. A long time ago, I mentioned to a rather snobbish gardening friend that I was thinking of planting some gladioli, and met with a withering response that no one plants gladioli anymore. From this bit of confrontation, I learned a valuable lesson about why I garden. I garden to please myself. While I would like others to like my garden, I'm really working to satisfy one person, me. Gardening rules should act as guidelines. Guidelines you may decide to follow or to break. Common gardening wisdom recommends planting in odd groups of 1, 3, 5, and more. However, in every gardener's life, there comes a time when you might want 2 or 4 of a particular plant. We're all confined by room, sun or shady areas, and price. And I have found that, properly planted, 2 specimens may please me as much as 3 would. I may plant nut. I'm curious about how a particular plant will look. Some consider my garden a hodgepodge, while I refer to it as organized chaos. Some have accused me of being a plant collector, not necessarily a compliment. I manage to shrug off these comments because I do not garden for other people. I garden for myself. When I met Mark Withington, the director of the J.C. Ralston Arboretum, at a symposium, he announced that he was more of a plant person than a gardener, and that he was intellectually fascinated with plants. Clearly, he was a man after my own heart. A landscape designer once advised me to buy 25 specimens of a single plant, and I gasped. Clearly, he was after waves of color, something I am not. Which one of us is wrong? The answer is neither one of us. We are just after different gardening results. I am passionate about my sustainable roses, but don't want a hedge of roses, especially all of one variety. There is nothing wrong with it. It simply isn't the end product I want. I personally like plants all mixed together so that a crinum might land up near a shrub rose that is surrounded by daylilies. This might be jarring to your eye, but to my eye, it's quite pleasing. The point I am making is that gardens should reflect our personalities. My organized chaos reflects the fact that I'm not as tidy as I should be. I doubt if I will change. And please don't misunderstand me in thinking you can throw all gardening rules out the window. You cannot. You must determine your own gardening rules. Here are a couple of mine. Feed the soil, not with tons of fertilizer, but with compost. Weed, weed, weed. Research the plants to avoid overly enthusiastic ones. I won't plant invasive plants. Only plant own root roses. Avoid orange. If you're shaking your head at the last two, let me explain. I dislike the color orange. I really dislike orange. And I have dear friends who search out the orange flowers I avoid. Orange works for them and doesn't for me. It's that simple. As for own root roses, I believe there are good reasons to insist on them. I will not compromise on this gardening rule of mine. I can afford to follow these rules because they work for me. They may not work for you, and that's okay, because hopefully you are gardening to please yourself, following your own rules. And yes, I did plant the gladioli, and that happily reappear every spring. And here are some events coming up. Walk on the Wild Side, August 7th. 11 a.m. to 12 noon. Explore Wild North Carolina with Annabelle Renwick, Blomquist Garden of Native Plants curator, in these seasonal walks through Blomquist Garden of Native Plants. There is a fee and you need to pre-register. It happens at Sarah P. Duke Gardens in Durham. Call 919-668-1707. 919-668-1707. Lunchbox Talk. Here There Be Dragons. August the 8th from 12 noon to 1 p.m. Dragonflies and damselflies are a common sight along most bodies of water, a gorgeous sight of summer in North Carolina. Join Chris Goforth from the NC Museum of Natural Sciences to learn which dragonflies travel in front of storms, the crazy acrobatics required to reproduce, and the fantastic way that dragonfly myths live up to dragon in their name. And it's free, but pre-registration is required. This will happen at the North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. Epiphytes. Life Out on a Limb, August the 8th at 6 p.m. with Josh Williams, PJCBG Garden Manager. There is a fee. Bring your lunch. To register, email carlella1st@gmail.com. This happens at Paul J. Senior Botanical Garden, located at 215 South Main Street in Kernersville. And Intro to Mushroom Foraging, August the 10th, 10 a.m. to 12 noon. Professional forager Frank Hyman provides a checklist to ID delicious mushrooms such as morels, chanterelles, and others, most of which have no poisonous lookalikes. Also covers how to cook and preserve them. There's a fee, and this happens in Durham. You can get details at www.frankhyman.com. And The Camera in Your Pocket, Garden Videography for the Novice, August the 10th from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. In this fun and hands-on workshop, you'll join Emmy Award-winning videographer Simon Keith as she teaches you simple and effective ways to use your smartphone or tablet to create and share professional-looking video content from your garden and nature. There is a fee, and pre-registration is required. It happens at North Carolina Botanical Garden in Chapel Hill. Go to the website ncbg.unc.edu. And a seasonal tree identification, August the 14th, from 5 p.m. to 8 p.m. Participants will learn to identify local trees based on bark, limb, buds, branching patterns, leaves, seeds, and habitat. This is an outdoor event, and participants should dress for the weather. There is a fee. The registration barcode is number 237241. This happens at Walnut Creek Wetland in Raleigh. Go to raleighnc.gov. Now a little information from For the Birds. Question: I found a bird that looks sick or injured. What should I do? Answer: most people's initial reaction is help the bird, but you should exercise extreme caution. State and federal law protects wild birds, and it is illegal to possess them. If the animal is a bird of prey, its talons can puncture skin and muscle, even through clothing. Great care is required when handling raptors, which makes this task best left to those licensed in wildlife rehabilitation. Other bird species should be approached with the same vigilance. Herons and egrets possess long, pointed bills to snatch fish from water, and when confronted by a predator, they will strike toward the eyes of a perceived enemy. They use their long, sharp bills as defensive weapons, not because they are mean animals, but because they are scared and protecting themselves. Remember that permits are required to legally handle or keep wild birds. And now from Garden Smarts by Shelley Goldblum. Smart shopping. Don't make your decisions in the nursery. That's impulse buying. Buying trees is like buying a computer or a car. The last thing you want to do is go to the showroom or you'll get seduced, believes Phil Normandy, curator of Brookside Gardens in Wheaton, Maryland. When you are choosing new trees, shrubs, or perennials, choose smart. You want to do your homework first. Consult with the staff at your local botanical garden or read a garden encyclopedia, urges Phil. Be aware of the drawbacks of hiring a professional to design landscape plans, cautions arborist Jeff Davis of Davis Tree Service in Onalaska, Wisconsin. Some landscapers are paid by the volume, and their work is overzealous. It can be costly for you, and your landscaping eventually can get out of control and become overcrowded as the shrubs and trees mature. By all means, consult with experts, but ultimately, make your own decisions. If you are choosing a flowering shrub or tree, don't let the flowers sway you, warns Gary Kohler. The flowers are like advertising, but most of them only bloom for 2 weeks. You have to live with the tree the other 50 weeks, too. Like in any romance, the date may be wonderful, but the marriage might be awful. It's better to buy a shrub or tree or herbaceous perennial when it is not in bloom. That way you'll make a better choice based on growth potential, environmental needs, and year-round suitability, Gary says. Today's average length of residence in any one home is somewhere in the neighborhood of 7 years, Brookside Gardens curator Phil Normandy notes. Part of the throwaway society we live in is the attitude that I'm going to be out of here in a few years. Don't put in plants that will grow too large and cause problems for the next owner, urges Phil. I suggest people look at smaller shrubs. People's time is getting more compressed, and control measures tend to be drastic and lethal. So match the plant to the site. When we buy a shrub or tree, says Michigan native Pat Ostrander, we do not buy a perfect one. We look for the one with a crook because it looks more natural and has more character. Beware of cute little things in the garden center. They have the potential to turn into monsters, warns Arnold Arboretum's Gary Kohler. Most people put in trees and shrubs and spend the rest of their lives trying to control them by pruning. Know in advance their mature height. Do not select solely on the basis of flowers, fruit, or autumn colors, but consider rate of growth, height, width, shape, and volume of the plant. Will it still please you 5 years from now? Be open to having a wider foundation plantings of shrubs and reducing the size of your lawn area, suggests Minnesota Zoological Gardens horticulture curator Roberta Sladke. Shrubs require care, especially in their early stages, but they're more efficient over the long haul. You won't be so dependent on watering and the need to fertilize and mow. Lawns are very energy demanding and inefficient. Planting any tree too close to your home can wreck your foundation. Old homes had 2-foot thick stone foundations. Today, they're just 10-inch concrete block. To protect them from root damage, it's safer to go at least 30 feet from four major trees, cautions retired agricultural agent Jim Ness. The old saying, big is best, is not necessarily so, says arborist John Kehoe. Greenhouse foreman of the nation's oldest municipal garden, Elizabeth Park Rose Garden in Hartford, Connecticut. When it comes to choosing trees, the bigger ones are seductive. But the larger the tree, the more shock its root system will experience when you transplant it, John says. Whereas an annual may take several weeks, or sometimes just days to recover, a tree may not recover for 6 to 15 years. When you buy a plant, cautions Gary Kohler, don't rely on what the salesperson says. They want to sell, and they'll tell you what you want to hear. Take a good garden book with you when you shop to help you be an informed consumer. Or go over and look at their books containing information about the plant you intend to purchase. All good garden centers have a reference library. When digging a hole for a tree, avoid making the V-shaped holes most people dig. A tree hole should have a wide bottom and narrow top so roots can spread out. The shape of your shovel will influence the kind of hole you dig. For planting trees and shrubs, use a square-edged spade with a flat, level shape. It's also great for the clean cut you need to edge the lawn and create flower beds. If you only have a scooped shovel, cut the sides of the hole with the shovel inverted. We've run out of time for today's episode of Out in the Garden. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you enjoyed it. I'm Cindy Fowler, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, formerly known as the Triangle Radio Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast after the broadcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. So long until the next time. If you have any comment or questions, please call 919-832-5111.